I want to speak not of the past, but of the future. Where do we go from here? What next? Shall we continue in the same patterns with roughly the same structures and the same ethos which has dominated during the past several years? Or do we want to develop new types of programs? Do we want to thrust out in new directions? Or do we want to continue what we've been doing and make our goal simply to do it better and perhaps involve more people? Do we want to continue in the same general paths, with the only important changes being improved efficiency and effectiveness? Perhaps this is the course we should take. Perhaps it is the only course we can take. What we've been doing is good. And to continue doing good, only more effectively, is a worthy goal. I have in mind another possible goal, another possible direction. I have a dream, as Martin Luther King would say. I would like to see the United Church of Raleigh be the seedbed for something that might be called radical Christianity. Christianity, at its very best, is a radical and revolutionary movement. It is a flame, a vibrant force, a sweeping spirit which demands sacrifice and gives ecstasy. From time to time, radical Christianity flames up within the framework of the church. For examples, we could look to the book of Acts, some aspects of the monastic movement, the early moments of the Reformation, the Quaker movement in its beginnings, the nonconformist movement in England, which became Congregationalism, the inception of Methodism, etc. Contemporary examples would be the Iona community in Scotland, such inner-city churches as the East Harlem Protestant Parish in Harlem, the Church of the Savior in Washington, D.C., Judson Memorial Church in Greenwich Village, New York. Some parts of the freedom movement in Negro churches exhibit a kind of radical Christianity. In some ways, United Church of Raleigh is a part of this radical tradition. So if we moved in this direction, it would not be altogether incongruous with our tradition. Let me be more specific as to what radical Christianity might look like and mean in our situation. One of its marks would be a holy worldliness, a recognition that the church is called to serve the world, that God so loved the world that the world is the sphere of divine activity. It has become popular to think of the church as the place where people come to meet God, and Christian activity is thought of as being closely identified with church activity. Without canceling the half-truth of this line of thought, the doctrine of holy worldliness recognizes the secular sphere as the primary field of meeting and wrestling with God. The face of the neighbor and the neighborhood with its political and economic structures, here we meet the divine at work, judging and redeeming. In the places where we spend most of our time living and working, these are the places where we make our religious response. The church, in its gathered life, is not to be built up and strengthened for its own sake. Institutional self-preservation is secondary. service, witness, and mission to the world are primary. Closely connected to the idea of holy worldliness is the idea of the ministry of the laity. In radical Christianity, every Christian takes seriously the idea that he is a Christian minister. This does not mean, primarily, that he should spend a lot of time helping with ecclesiastical functions. It means that he knows himself to be a Christian minister in his daily work, in his community, in his family. It means that he is just as much a churchman when sitting at his desk as when sitting in the pew. In this understanding, the professional minister's function is seen to be to help the lay minister carry out his ministry in the world. The lay ministry is by far the most important. He is in more direct contact with the world. Radical Christianity includes also the idea of radical faithfulness in traditional practices of corporate worship. Faithfulness in worship has always been the mark of vital Christianity. It is an inevitable counterpart of holy worldliness. When people are strongly striving to be Christian ministers in their daily work, when they understand their life in the world to be life in dialogue with God through the neighbor, then they want to worship. They want to come together with those who are bound with them in common cause. They know that they cannot carry on alone. They want to engage in special acts of devotion and celebration directed toward the one who is with them in their common days and common rounds. Prayer and service are not two different paths. When Christianity is at its best, prayer and service are to each other as are inhaling and exhaling in the act of breathing. In the ethos of radical Christianity, loyalty to the community of fellow followers is a high value. When we join a church, we commit ourselves not first to an institution, to a program, or to an abstract ideal, or to some private resolutions. But we commit ourselves to God and to a group of persons bound in common cause. We promise to be faithful participants in the gathered life of the church. And when anyone falls down on this promise, he hurts the entire fellowship. I know a church wherein every member must decide each year whether or not he wants to continue his membership. To continue means a commitment to be active and participating. There is the realization here that one is bound to one's brethren in the faith. Here there is also the recognition that integrity is more important than size of membership in a Christian fellowship. What power there can be in a group solidly committed to one another under a common cause? There are only a few things I feel quite certain about. One of them is that there is no more effective instrument for the purposes of God in the world than a community of people who are so devoted to the cause of God and to one another that they are willing to accept demanding disciplines of a common life. In addition to loyalty to the fellowship, there must also be love. I mention loyalty first only because it is a precondition. We often have to be loyal to one another before we can learn to love. Love is the higher aim. Jesus said, "By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, that you love one another." This is the test of the inner life of the fellowship and the mark of its redemptive power, if it has any. Many lonely people in our time are asking, consciously and unconsciously, "Where in the world can I find a community of persons who really love one another and who are caught up in a common cause which takes them out of themselves?" A church of radical Christianity will convey this quality. The statement of our faith uses the phrase, "the cost and the joy of discipleship." If our church life is without much joy, it may well be that we want the joy without the cost. But the two go together unavoidably. The idea of radical Christianity combines the two. It means a demanding kind of faith, demanding of our time, our pocketbook, our leisure. Demanding in terms of faithfulness to the common life of the church, the worship, the education, the work. Demanding in terms of being willing to risk, to experiment, to try to do the seemingly impossible and the unconventional. Demanding in terms of personal study and prayer. How much does it cost to be a member of United Church of Raleigh? How much does it cost to be a Christian as we present Christianity? How much of a joy is it to you to be a part of this fellowship? Do you often experience the grace of being swept up out of yourself into a cause which is both concrete in the world and linked with eternity? This is not really a report, and I've not been very specific about how we might move in the direction of radical Christianity, even if you shared this dream with me. Maybe we are already moving in that direction. I hope so. At any rate, these are the thoughts on the growing edge of my mind as we look toward 1964.